Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
All right, good morning.
Hey.
Okay, what were we just talking about?
Oh, my gosh.
Tell me about what y'all were doing last night.
I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. Okay, the cool part is Jen and I went to a little happy hour, place we like here locally, and it was fun. I had a good time. We get home, and I'm fiddling around doing a few things, and she turns the TV on, and I think she was just trying to avoid watching the football game, which I wanted to watch for a minute. And so she loves Wheel of Fortune, so we watched the end of Wheel of Fortune and, you know, Ryan Seacrest do his thing. And I came back in the room, and what had started playing was Celebrity Family Feud. Let's play the feud. And, man, I guess I'd just forgotten or I didn't put it together, but it's hosted by Steve Harvey. Oh,
who, one of the funniest men in the world.
One of the funniest guys on the planet. And, I, you know, you may go listen to him this afternoon and be offended, and I don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, he's hysterical.
Yeah.
And so I remember I lived in Memphis for a while when I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And driving around in the mornings, he had a morning show back when that was a thing.
Oh yeah,
and
he still does.
Does he really?
101.1 here in Nashville. Oh my gosh! Some morning,
nephew Tommy
still makes all of his prank phone calls. Oh. I mean, I'll listen to it once
okay,
every
then I'm
two
on
three
it.
Weeks.
I'm back
check
on.
It out. I think it's 101.1.
I did not know that.
Oh my gosh!
101 The Beat Jams.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Oh, I laugh so hard. My favorite things is nephew Tommy, and then when he gives advice. To girls. I listened to him earlier this week. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting your story, but no, this so is Steve funny. Harvey.
But I would listen to him in Memphis, and he was one of the original kings of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we watched, and this is embarrassing, but we laughed. So we watched, it was Celebrity Family Feud. So it's people, you know. Great. One of the funny things is there's one guy on there who's had a history of being married multiple times. He had trouble evidently rounding up family members. So he had friends.
No way.
One family member. On the Family Feud. So that was funny.
There's a story behind that.
There's lots of stories behind that, I think. And then we watched four episodes.
Did you really?
I laughed till I cried, dude.
That's awesome.
I just forget how funny he is to me.
When you came in this morning, you told me that you and Jen had watched the show last night. If you'd give me a million guesses,
never guessed that.
I would have never got the Family Feud.
No. And I have this feeling that it's going to be on in our house like a regular thing. We don't, the number of times we watch network TV. Now, if I kick the bucket tomorrow, Jen's going to watch all kinds of network TV, like Dancing with the Stars and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's recorded right now at our house.
We don't watch, I bet we don't watch an hour of network TV a year.
Wow.
So the fact that it was even on.
Is kind of bizarre.
And she finagled me on, she got me on Wheel of Fortune. So
and
I
now you're
in
hooked.
The room. Yeah. No, I'm not hooked on Wheel of Fortune at all.
Oh, Family Feud, my bad.
Yeah, I'm hooked on the feud. Let's play the feud.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Well, that leads us right into our discussion for today.
Which is about?
Feuding families.
Feuding families. Well, that would be a fun conversation.
That would be a good conversation.
Oh, my goodness. Should we tell personal stories?
No. We could.
Oh, gosh.
I'm trying to think who in my family is listening to this.
Yeah.
So I'd have to think about that a little bit.
Oh, man.
So this was another discussion we had last night because Jen said, what are y'all going to podcast about tomorrow? And I said, well, I'm not sure, but I think we're going to hang in on maybe the core emotions.
Yeah, we talked about
and
that
she
possibly.
She said, what are the core emotions? I said, that's a great question. I don't know what they are. Mm-hmm. Ask Siri.
Uh-huh.
That's what we do. And so Siri had a weird answer, but one of the core emotions that came up like in three different lists was disgust.
Yeah. Yeah.
That didn't make any sense to
me. Yeah. Yeah. It feels more like a way we react to an emotion to me. But you know, in the little Pixar Inside Out movie, that was a movie, it was a kid's movie. Your kids are too old, but because of my grandbabies, I've seen it. It's the story of this little 12-year-old girl, cartoon, of course, 12-year-old girl named Riley, who her parents make her move, and then she has all these emotional reactions. So it really is a primer to core emotions. It's an amazing movie, and they talk about five core emotions, and the fifth one they talk about is disgust. But I think what they're really trying to talk about is shame. So I think there's a lot of social scientists that make this distinction between shame and disgust and say disgust is an emotion and shame is the way we react. I think it's probably just the opposite personally. And the other social scientists, this is not about me, but people much smarter than me in this space would call shame a core emotion as well. And so when I hear the word disgust, I go, oh, somebody's trying to talk about shame more than likely. Or maybe something else, but usually that's it. Core emotion things are interesting. You know, we Number of years ago, when I first got introduced to the world of emotional intelligence, I kind of thought, okay, how many core emotions are there out there? Because I'd read a book by a guy here in town who talks, Chip Dodd, have so much respect for his book, The Voice of the Heart. He talks about 8 core emotions. But even on his list, there's a couple emotions that I go, man, are those really core? And are one of them, I mean, is that even really an emotion? Or is that just something that happens? And, you know, I'm not arguing, just my curiosity. So I looked and built a spreadsheet like I usually do to understand things and looked at 20 different social scientists who've talked about core emotions. And what I discovered is depending on what school of thought you're in, there's between 5 and between 13 core emotions.
Wow.
Based on what, again, how people use their language. You know, like some people talk about being shocked as a core emotion, you know, laughter. One researcher said it was a core emotion. Anyway, as I looked at all these core emotions, I just used the power of Excel and I sorted them and I realized that everybody agrees on 5 core emotions. It was interesting. Then, you know, other people may have more than that. And as I started looking at all the other ones beyond those core 5, I realized, gosh, I feel like they could be a subset of one of the 5 core emotions. So for example, loneliness came up from several researchers as a core emotion. Well, when I hear loneliness, you know, first of all, I think loneliness sometimes can be just a state of being. Mm-hmm. But I think loneliness, you know, I think we can, quote unquote, feel lonely sometimes. And it can be an emotional reaction. I'm just not sure that it's primal in us. I think there's something more primal in us. So like, for example, I think I can be lonely. And what I'm really feeling is what we talked about last time, sad.
Yeah.
You know, that makes me lonely, you know, or I can really be afraid. I'm by myself in the woods and it's getting dark and I don't know the way out of the woods. And I may feel lonely, but what I'm really feeling is I'm terrified because I think I heard a bear growling or whatever, right?
Right.
So I think what I've always enjoyed doing is trying to get down to what are the most core basic emotions to make the vocabulary language a lot shorter so that when I'm trying to figure out what emotion am I feeling, I can actually go, oh, wait, I only have 5 choices to choose from. Mm-hmm. So that's where I've landed as I talk about these 5 core emotions all the time.
What are the 5?
The way I talk about them is anger, sadness, fear, shame, and gladness. It's funny when you hear those, what goes through your mind? Anger, fear, sad, shame, glad.
Well, I'd be cheating if I answered because I've read Chip Dodd's book too.
Yeah.
So he would say, or did say, I guess, that you can't experience real gladness. True gladness, unless you experience all the other emotions.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that an interesting concept? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like what does that mean?
It's like you can't pull it out by itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of the sum total, right? Mm-hmm. I've got to be willing to work through anger, fear, sadness, shame. He would talk about 3 other emotions before I can ever get to understanding gladness.
What are his other 3?
Hurt, lonely, and guilty.
Oh,
yeah.
The lonely, I could see there is something. I think there is something primal in us that we are not created to be alone.
Yeah, very very Genesis 2, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't know that I think about that as a core emotion.
Yeah.
Maybe it is.
Yeah. Well,
or it's not.
I think for sure, you know, it falls in that emotional space. It feels like to me. I just think I like to help people do the work behind that. Okay, so you're lonely, feeling a lot of loneliness. What's triggering that loneliness? And I think generally that's where they will get back to something more about either, again, their fear or their sadness or maybe even their anger. You know, I'm lonely because my dad left. If you can get a little kid to talk about it, they feel lonely because what they do is they're really missing dad. Well, behind that, they're angry that dad left. They're sad that dad left, you know. So I think there's something good about the exercise of getting to the more core emotion. There's one writer that talks about, he wrote a book years ago called Affect Phobia, and he says, you know, foundationally, there's really just one emotion, and it's fear. That is the most common emotion for all of us, and it's the thing that everything comes back to. And, you know, he's on to something there at some level.
Right.
You know, I think if you think about sadness really is the fear that it's never going to be okay again.
Yeah.
Shame is really the fear that I'm not enough, you know. Anger is the fear that something I want is being blocked and I don't know how to get to it. So I have an anger reaction. So, you know, I think there is something about realizing, man, our natural bent is often to respond out of something super primal. And maybe one of the most primal things is fear. And again, it goes back to what we've talked about so many times, Genesis 3. when Adam and Eve fall, when everything falls apart in the creation narrative of the Bible for people of faith, they know this story well. But, you know, when Adam and Eve go and hide themselves, they cover up, literally their first words, I was afraid, mm-hmm. and I hid myself.
Yeah.
And so you think fear is it's pretty basic, I think, in our life. That's why we talked about it not long ago, some in here too.
Which ones have we did? Sadness?
And yeah, we talked about loneliness.
Loneliness a little bit.
Yeah, that member, Chef Huddy, asked us to talk about that. I thought maybe we talked about fear as well.
We might have.
Yeah, anxiety, because you started asking the question about anxiety, and then that led us into talking about fear.
Right. I was going to say something about something you said about Genesis 3 made me think. I don't know. I lost the thought.
Okay.
Anyway.
It'll come back.
Anger.
Yeah. Spend some time on that.
Let's do that one.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Feels good.
That'd be fun. Yeah. It does feel good. Doesn't good. It? Yeah. My gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you hear let me flip the script for a second. When you hear the idea of anger, how would you, again, I know you've got the Chip Dodd brain too, but when you think of anger just growing up most of your life, how would you define anger? Like, what is anger?
I mean, let me back up 1 second. I remembered what I was going to say. I like what you just said about one of the things that makes sadness relate to fear is you're afraid it's never going to be okay again.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because you think if you knew it was going to be okay, the sadness would be easier to deal with.
Right. 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 I think it's one of the things I do appreciate is realizing that these and Chip talks about this in his book as well, but these emotions, they daisy chain together. Mm-hmm. Rarely do you just feel one of them, you know.
Right.
Usually they're triggering and moving in and out. But again, most of us are so unaware that we're even feeling something, so we end up just having this like reaction to an emotion as opposed to being able to respond, to slow down, go, oh my gosh, this is what's going on inside of me, and again, not let it kind of overtake us. We talk a lot about the emotions kind of in the middle brain, our amygdala, the limbic system area, that what will happen is the emotion gets so big that it overrides the frontal cortex, you know, the part of our brain that actually is rational and thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, you know, that's why in a moment when this transitions perfectly into anger, you know, in a moment when something happens that I don't like or when I feel like I'm not able to get something that I want, that's why my reaction can be disproportionately big to what actually just happened. You know, I've seen and you've seen me do things that were just unbelievably ridiculous, over the top in responding to a situation. And what I would have said in that moment is that I'm angry. And I probably was, but because I didn't realize I was angry, then it's like the frontal part of my brain, the part that's logical and rational, it goes offline and the emotion then takes over. I mean, I think of an example of in marriages all the time where, you know, if I ask a man, hey, would you ever call your wife such and such a name, or would you ever tell your wife she's such and such a thing? You know, man, oh my gosh, I love my wife. She's a good woman. I would never do that. But create the right environment, create the right situation where the emotions get high and the emotion gets bigger than the frontal cortex, if you please.
Mm-hmm.
We call it emotionally flooded. And suddenly what happens is the words that come out of this husband's mouth, and by the way, this goes both directions, the word that comes out of this wife's mouth, what comes out suddenly, logically, you would never say it. That's why we'll say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I said that. Well, you got hijacked. Your emotional brain took over. And when it's anger is like, by gosh, I'll get what I want. I'll get it right now.
Goes through all the barricades.
Blows right through them. That's a great image right there that you created.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when you said that, I thought of this example, and I'm trying to remember the details. I think I was in my driveway and I was on the phone. This was probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was working and I got a call, and there was something about the call. It wasn't like disastrous, like, you know, a deal fell through or something. It was just a buildup of an annoying conversation and a frustration level. And I think it may have been, I don't know if it was Caroline and Jen, we were leaving, shutting the garage door, and I get off this call, and I mean like Rob Gronkowski, I spike my phone in the driveway as hard as I could.
Gosh.
It bounced so high, and I turn around, and they're both just looking at me with this wide-eyed look like, what? Because I don't do that. I can get there. I mean, yeah. They've all seen me get there, so I'm not saying that that's not possible. But in the moment, I did that, and I felt great.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the weird part. Like, I didn't and I think I said something like, man, I'm sorry you had to see that, but that's where I am right now.
Right.
You know? Like,
right.
God, I was so mad. Yeah. And then, you know.
Yeah.
It cost me a new phone, but yeah. So when you said they can overtake or it runs through the barricade, man,
And, you know, you think about it, unfortunately, I mean, the tragedy of that story, quote unquote, is you had to pay another $1,000 for a phone, whatever, right? But no person is harmed in that story. I think what happens a lot in our anger is that we, in effect, throw the person down, or we throw the phone at the person. You know, I don't mean literally, but metaphorically, mm-hmm. the words that come out, it's what the book of James talks about is the tongue can bring life, or it can just be hellfire, man. It can bring unbelievable death.
You know, we hurt people with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the part that I find myself really passionate about, is wanting people to understand, look, your anger is never the problem. Mm. It's never the problem. It's what you do with your anger that can and often does lead to major problems.
So let's say emotional brain overrides frontal cortex.
Yep.
And you say something, a husband, a wife says something, a friend says something, and it just is unbelievably hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
Came out of that spot in their brain, anger overrode other things. I guess one question would be, A, how do you repair that?
Yeah.
And then B, do they really feel that way?
Yeah. Right.
Like, what about that was true? Because if it's back there,
yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. Like, well, I wish I hadn't said that. That's not true. That's what people say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh my gosh, I didn't mean that. Well, yep. Out of the heart, the mouth speaks.
Yeah.
Right. And so did you mean it?
Right.
Or,
right.
So what do you do? I'm asking that legitimately. I have no idea. This is going to be your expertise day.
Well, it's going to be my experience day. I will see how much expertise there is in it. You know, I think when I love that question. One of my sons always says this: emotions make great passengers, but horrible drivers. Yeah, I love that image.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I think of it this way: is that emotions are really like a flashing light on your dashboard. That when you they're there to inform you that something's going on, but they doesn't necessarily mean you need to pull over the side of the road right now and, you know, have your car towed. But mm-hmm. gosh, I need to pay attention to what's going on. Man, there's a light flashing right now. When I don't pay attention, like we're talking, that's when the ugly comes. I think what you asked just a minute ago is such a great question about repair. But before we get, we'll come to that in a second. But the second part of your question is what I think really jumps out to me, where it's like, is it true when I say that? And I think that's where we've got to realize, okay, there is a truth to an emotion that I felt in those moments. Mm-hmm. But the words that came out, were those reactionary? Which means, if so, by definition, they weren't very thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or is it really the truth in me? And so you know, you think, for example, when those horrible phrases come out of somebody's mouth, to a boss, to an employee, to a spouse, what's true is I am really mad as hell right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I want, and I perceive you're the one that's keeping me from getting it. Like, that is probably true, you know?
Yeah.
But when it turns into me calling you a name, when it turns into me belittling you, when it turns into me, you know, attacking your character, that's where the emotional dysregulation has happened. And now I'm like a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old in a sandbox, and I'll throw anything I can get my hands on at you to hurt you because you took my shovel that I was playing with away from me. You know?
Right.
And I think that's something we don't think about enough, of what happens in us and what happens to people we're talking with at times, is that we revert to one of the more primal places in our life. And sometimes I see this in my own marriage. I see it in marriages I work with. There are moments when, if you can really slow down and watch what's happening, it is like 2 8-year-olds or 2 12-year-olds going at it with each other. Well, let's be honest. 8 and 12-year-olds don't have good cognitive development.
Right.
So that's why they call names all the time. You're just stupid. Well,
that's
why?
All they can come up
that's
with.
That's all they can come up with. They can't really say, wow, you really hurt me when you took my shovel. I would like to have it right back. Could we have a conversation about that?
Yeah.
Said no 8-year-old ever.
Right.
You know? And so I think when we get to that place of emotionally flooded, we're almost like 8-year-olds speaking to each other sometimes. That's why I think repair, to the first part of your question, is so crucial. Knowing how to slow down and do two things. Number one, I think one of the most important things we do is going, hey, what I just did, first of all, 100% out of bounds. I am complete ownership, radical, extreme ownership, as Jocko says. You know, I am totally wrong in how I just came at you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know something is going on inside of me, and I don't know if I understand it fully, but if you'd be so gracious to give me a couple minutes, I'd love to process where that venom came from towards you, because I know that's not my heart towards you, honey. Can I have a minute? And again, if we can be emotionally healthy, a spouse at even that moment can go, wow, okay, they know they were way out of bounds right there. Instead of what happens as we hang on, no, you called me stupid. That's what you really think of me. And now I'm doubled down because in my emotion, on the other side of the equation,
right,
my anger, my fear is getting triggered. But repair only happens when we both can slow down and go, oh my gosh, that there's nothing cool about that. That was out of bounds. That was wrong. Can you give me a beat? Can I catch my breath? Can I regulate? And can we come back? And can I own this more fully? And can I tell you what I really am feeling? Because I am angry. And there is something I want to talk about. But boy, just how I talked about it, it was hellfire. It was so not cool.
Right. Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I'm going back to something you said a minute ago, but when you said that's not my heart towards you, unpack that. Boy, I can't believe I just used that phrase. Unpack that a little bit. God, I hate that. Talk about that a little bit.
I'm rubbing off on you, baby.
God, Amani. Let's go. Because I think if you know, we've talked about this before, if you have a healthy relationship with somebody, you have to have conflict.
Yeah.
So maybe your heart toward them at that moment is, maybe you expressed it poorly, but maybe some of that is your heart toward them at that moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a great nuance, I think. Absolutely.
You know, because it's like, you know, if there is room for anger, then
yeah.
All right, this is what I'm feeling, and I was a terrible way to express it, but
yeah,
let's figure this out.
Yeah, I love how you're asking that question. Maybe the way to think about it is the maturity side of me versus the immature side of me, right? Like, when I am emotionally dysregulated, I'm that little kid in the sandbox fighting ugly if I'm not careful. And that's not the most authentic part of me. That's not the truest part of me. That's not what I really know, believe, I think even feel about my spouse in those moments or my friend. But boy, the immature, the childish part of me, that's what came out. And when it came out, it was ugly. So I want to be able to get to the place of where there's something that I'm really disappointed in, I'm angry in, I'm wanting from you, and I want to talk about it. But when I've diverted, I guess, to name calling, defensiveness, you know, contemptuous moments, attacking you, that's the ugly part of my heart that I want to own and go, man, you experienced this dark side of me, the ugly part of my heart. But the truest thing about me is I love you. I want to be in a relationship with you. I care about you. I'm angry right now, but boy, in my anger, I sucked at trying to communicate that. Can I get a mulligan? Can we do a do-over here? Because I did not express my deepest, truest part of who I am in that moment. What came out was just the primal anger, and I wanted to attack, and I wanted to do damage to you. I think it's also a place where anger and fear are really close and often confused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times, I think about, especially as a dad, I would say, man, I was really angry with one of my kids today. Well, I look back on it now and I go, I think most of the times I was more fearful with one of my kids today. And so what came out was rage. You know, rage is connected to
big
control.
Difference.
Yeah. Rage is like, by God, I'll control you. You will do what I said you have to do. That's not anger. That's where I'm trying to dominate you. You know, when I'm angry, you know, I think this is, again, this is a vision a lot of us don't have, is that, man, I can be angry and be super, super loving and super helpful and super kind to a parent, to a child, to a spouse, to a coworker. But I have to be able to regulate the emotional charge and let the cognitive, rational part of me that really wants to speak well lead.
Yeah, I guess I'm stuck on that a little bit.
Tell me more.
I just think that's interesting what all that reveals. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm not necessarily thinking of this in, I'm trying to think of difficult relationships I've had in the past, not necessarily, I mean, in terms of your spouse, all that makes sense. And you do, but there's some people, I guess where I'm stuck is there's some people I've had a history with in my life that mm-hmm. I don't think my heart is for them. I'm not for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't necessarily have their well-being at heart. And mm-hmm. I've had such conflict that mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't. So when you say that's not my heart towards you, I don't know. Well, maybe it is.
I hear what you're saying. I think I'm thinking about it in a relationship of connectivity, a relationship of connection. You know, that man, when the ugly comes out there, I've got to be willing to go, gosh.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, but I think you're right. I think there are some people that, for whatever reason, we couldn't say with integrity, man, that's not my real heart. There are some people that we want to cut relationship off of. There's some people we don't want to do relationship with. I don't know that's necessarily problematic. I mean, I don't think we're allowed to hate them. I don't think we're allowed to do damage to them. But yes, I think there are times when we're communicating with someone or we see someone, we just realize, man, I don't want to do relationship there. Now, there's still something going on inside of us emotionally.
Right.
And we need to be aware of what that is.
Right.
It may not be anger in those moments. It might be something else. I may be sad because of how they've hurt me in the past. I may be afraid that they're going to try to get something from me that I don't want to be taken from me.
Right.
There's still an emotional charge in there, but it may or may not be anger in those moments.
Yeah.
You know, there's this dignity side of anger that I don't think we speak about enough. I remember one of the first times that I was ever hanging out with Chip, it's funny, I saw him a couple weeks ago. I haven't seen him in years. And we were catching up, and he remembered the very first time we ever met, and I had forgotten it. And so we brought it back to my attention. I was like, oh, gosh, I totally remember that night. We were at a friend's cabin, and he'd just written the book, and he was talking to a group of like 10 of us about the book. And this was the phrase he made, and I remember thinking, this guy's crazy. And he said this. He said, Jesus was the angriest man who ever lived. And I remember thinking, okay, I got to get out of this cabin, get out of here fast. This is dangerous territory. Dangerous territory I'm in, you know? But as he kept talking, and as he would define what anger is, you know, that anger is the emotion that we experience when something that we want is being blocked. Anger is what we experience when something that we want is being blocked. And then you think about Jesus' core mission was to bring in his Father's kingdom. And every day he's being blocked by Pharisees, by Sadducees, by unbelievers, by people who are against him.
Right.
And I think, oh my gosh. And then Chip started talking about anger in such a way I'd never heard it spoken of. Growing up for me, anger was two fists up, you know, ready to fight.
Closer to rage.
Yes. Anger was somebody with a red face, was the blood vessels popping out. Anger was somebody getting ready to dog cuss you or hit you. You know, that's what anger was to me. So there was nothing redemptive in anger to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when Chip started talking about anger and said, look, anger is the emotion of neediness. Anger is the emotion that says there's something I want or there's something I need. And healthy anger leads me to go, hey, I want blank. You know, in other words, there's something I want and it's being blocked. I still want it. Is it possible I can get to it? Is it possible I can have it? And then I think we started talking about the synonyms for anger. He used words like desire and yearning and longing. And then he used the big one, passion. He said anger, the emotion of anger is really about our passion, about our deepest desires. Something I desire, something I want is being blocked. That's why anger percolates.
Hmm.
And then I remember I was sitting there and I thought to myself, wow, the Passion Week of Jesus, the last week of his life. That's what we call it, the Passion Week.
Right.
Would it be fair to call it the Anger Week? Well, in this definition of the word angry, I think so. You know, it's like it's his passion, it's his desire. I want redemption for all mankind. So, shoot, yeah, man. Jesus may have been the angriest man who ever lived, the most passionate man who ever lived, the most desirous man. The man who used the energy of anger every day to move forward saying, I want you to know my Father. I want you to be rightly connected to my Father. That began redeeming the word anger for me, going, wait, so there's a really healthy anger mm-hmm. that leads me going, hey, can I tell you what I really want? Because I think I was horrible in our marriage for years at asking Laura for what I wanted. I'd rather her try to read my mind.
Yeah.
And then when she wouldn't read my mind, I would resent her more. I would get right. more bitter. Well, resentment usually is a.
You've known me for 20 years. Why didn't you know that?
Exactly.
You
know? Yeah. Resentment is an impaired expression of right. anger. What I really should be doing is going, wait, I'm angry. Well, if I'm angry, what is anger telling me? It's telling me there's something I want. What is it that I want? Oh, well, I need to ask for what I want.
Yeah.
Stop this mind reading game.
You know? Right. All right. That's good.
Yeah.
So we're, as in his terms, what would it be, so repaired anger and impaired anger?
Yeah.
To use Chip Dodd's terms.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
would you say about that?
Yeah. Well, I think you know, he talks a lot about the impairments, you know, when the emotion doesn't come out most authentically, when we're unaware of it, so it comes out kind of, I call it just in its ugly style, its ugly version. Yeah, I think one of the biggest ways that anger comes out is in its ugly version is this sense of resentment that I have. You know, when I'm walking around resenting someone, I'm probably angry. There's probably something about that person that I want. It may be my jealousy that comes out. It may be pride that comes out. But those are impaired expressions of, gosh, I'm actually angry. Doesn't mean I need to get in a fight with them. Doesn't mean I have to even confront them. I need to slow down and go, wait, what is it that I perceive that what is it I'm really wanting? And when I see that person, what triggers in me that says, gosh, I really want blank. Mm. So I think, you know, there's some other words he uses that aren't coming to mind off the top of my head. But I know that when anger comes out sideways, just think in terms of those words of resentment and pride, envy, jealousy, when those things are percolating, there's probably something going on in me. But there's also, I think, a way that anger comes out more passively, another impaired expression, and it comes out really as almost a self-contemptuous place where it's like, you know, I never get what I want. You know, it's kind of like a combination of anger and sadness coming out in the ugly side, like self-pity almost, yeah. You know, like, well, I never get any. Instead of being able to go, wait, maybe you don't get it because you're not asking for it. I mean, that's played out in my life so many times. I mean, I can go back to middle school football. I mean, that far back in life. And remember being so resentful at a coach because he wouldn't let me play wide receiver. Well, did I ever tell him I wanted to play wide receiver? No. He had no idea. He couldn't read my mind.
Right.
But I can remember halfway through that year realizing, I've never said anything to him. What if I said, Coach, can I try wide receiver today? And I remember going and asking. In middle school football, they let you do anything pretty much, you know. And I remember getting out there and did it and caught a few balls. And suddenly he's going, man, you're pretty good at this. And I can remember thinking, well, it's about time you see me impaired.
Yeah.
Instead of being able to go, man, look at me. Good job. I finally spoke up and said, hey, there's something I want. Can I try this?
You know, we talked about this before, but that's been an issue I've had over the years, too. Mm-hmm. And I was working on a little kind of side business with some guys that I know, and they're a little bit older, different season of life than me. And one guy that's kind of a confidant, I'd been frustrated how long this was taking to get worked out.
Yeah.
And that there was no offer, there was no, we just weren't making any progress. And I was on the phone with him one day, and he just said, well, have you just asked? Have you sent him a proposal on what you want to do?
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of the same expectation, that 12-year-old in the linebacker line wanting to be in the receiver line.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
And exactly. Going, yeah, and I did, and he accepted it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, not sure why that roadblock is there necessarily, mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. There is something about, and what I found was resentment was building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I can be really quick to cut people off.
Yes.
Personally.
Yeah.
That's just I think people that know me well know that.
Yep.
But some of that's out of, you know, some of that's a combination of a bunch of things, mm-hmm. probably for a different episode. But
I think what you're saying is so powerful because this is where the emotions dovetail together. You know, the example you just gave of your friend saying, man, have you just asked him? Have you just given him a proposal?
Right.
You know, well, what do you think was going on you emotionally that kept you from asking him?
I mean, I think, Jeff, it goes back to stuff with your dad, with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I didn't, you know, he was not a force in my life,
yep.
in terms of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in my subconscious, I'm constantly looking for that.
Yeah.
And so part of that is, hey, yeah, you've done a great job and, you know, I'd like to do this for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yep.
That doesn't happen a lot.
Right. Right.
And yeah. so, and it's not, that's not his, that's not this guy's job.
Mm-hmm.
He's not my dad.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
And so, right. you know, there's a sense in which it's, you know, put your big boy pants on and mm-hmm. ask for what you need.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that, I think at its core, it's just that searching. There's a, you know, I just think guys that have a good, guys I know that have a, that have had a solid relationship with their dads.
Yeah.
There's a different kind of weight about them.
There is. It's a swagger, right?
Almost.
Yeah.
And yeah. so, yeah, it just is. Mm-hmm. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you know, as I hear you talk, I think I'm thinking about this world of emotions that we're talking about today. And I go, you know, there's that moment when you know you've got a good idea and you're wondering why, you know, resentment's growing. Why isn't he asking me? Why doesn't he want to do my idea, which I've never told him about, you know?
Right.
But I wonder if this is where the, again, I think where the emotions dovetail. I wonder if there's a part of you in those moments maybe connected to dad. Well, dad didn't show up anyway, so why would I ask anybody else? Almost that sense of apathy. Mm-hmm. That's really a sadness that's probably going on, that we're so far away from even knowing it's there.
Right.
You know, I'm really sad dad didn't show up. And so now I'm still carrying that, and it's causing me to be passive when I really should be saying, hey, I've got a great proposal. I've got a great idea. Or maybe, and for some of us, maybe it's more just, oh my gosh, but what if they say no? Or what if they think my idea is stupid? Well, man, that could be where fear or shame is holding us back. And again, the language that I love to use, because it sounds so confusing, is at some point I've got to be willing to get in touch with my anger. I've got to become angry about my proposal. What I mean by that, passionate. I've got to become desirous to go, wait, I think I have a good idea. I want to share it. And for you, it's so cool. It's one guy asking you a question. Well, have you told him?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like it led you to getting a wonderful result out of it. But it's almost like we have to work through those emotions. What's got me blocked telling me I can't ask to play wide receiver? What's got me blocked not willing to make this proposal? Maybe it's fear. Maybe it's shame. Okay, my anger can come alongside of me, and now it gives me the ability to say, there's the energy to move forward and say, hey, I'd like to run a route. I think I can catch a ball for you, you know, or whatever it may be.
And I think just as a practical tool too, sometimes I'm good at this, sometimes I'm not good at this, but clear communication.
Yeah.
Is somebody of mine says, I'm sure it's not original with him, but to be clear is to be kind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think there's, you know, because I probably would have, if this particular person hadn't asked me that question, if somebody else had to ask it or ask it in a different way that's less direct,
yeah,
I probably would have said, well, I mean, we've talked about that. Yeah, he knows I know. He knows I want to, you know, but have I said it? No, I haven't said it, and I haven't done it clearly, and I haven't done it in a language that makes sense to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so translate that into your conversations with your kids or your wife, husband, whoever, and you know, have you been clear?
Right.
Have you? I think one of the things about healthy anger is you can express things in a clear,
concise, yes,
concise, unjumbled way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you can make some progress sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Again, I love how you're saying that. I think for me, so many times the fear was so frontal in my brain that if I would try to ask for what I wanted, I would stammer and stutter all over my words. I would get out halfway. Well, you may not want to, but I know this might not be a good idea, but I had all those clauses in front of it, right? Yeah. And so going, hey, I have an idea. What if? You know, it's like I was afraid to be that direct at times. And again, I think it was where the fear overpowered me, but it's also where I didn't understand that, gosh, it's okay to speak directly about what I want.
That's what he said that I thought, guy that you know, and I won't say his name, but one of the funniest guys I know, we were in a small group with him years ago, and somebody in the group said, you know, I don't know, I hate being wrong. He just said, nobody likes being wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
No. And that, I thought, right. God, that's so true. We just don't, that protection mechanism is so strong.
Yeah.
We don't want to be, so when you say, God, why didn't I ask for that? Or I stammer about it. I mean, I do the same thing.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Part of it is I just don't want to be wrong.
Yeah.
I just hate being wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Because we're all wrong from time to time.
Right. And, right. Well, the only way to get right is to identify the wrong.
Yeah.
You know, what's the Thomas Edison quote? It's something like, I didn't fail 1,000 times. I just found 1,000 times that didn't work, or something like that. I mean, it'll be exactly
right,
it.
Right.
When inventing anything and you think, gosh, there's a tenacity, there's a grit to that. That, again, I think it's fueled with our topic today. It's fueled by anger, a willingness just to keep going, well, wait, I still want that, but so that may not be the best idea. Well, somebody else then come up with a better idea.
Yeah.
It's what Patrick Lencioni talks about, that, you know, healthy organizations demand conflict all the time, because it's through conflict that you get to the best solution.
Right.
So in a culture like that, it's not that you had a wrong idea. It's like, hey, man, thanks. That's great. That's generating us somewhere. How can we build on it?
Let's keep getting better at it.
Yes. And at some point, you know, you end up with something that looks maybe entirely different than where you started with, you know, 8 iterations earlier. But had that first one not come in the room, you may have never gotten to this 8th one. So, you know, I think there is something about all of us. I love what your friend said in that group that night. Nobody wants to be wrong. And it's almost like I wish we could remove that category in most places of being right or wrong and just going, wait, this is something I really want. Can we talk about it?
Right.
You know, and then figure out, what do we do with that, you know?
Right. I'll veer off topic for just a second, and I can see Jen rolling her eyes, but sports analogy. So yeah. I don't listen to a ton of podcasts, but one I love is called The Play Callers. And a friend of mine hooked me up with that. And so a guy, you know, the coach won a Super Bowl with the Broncos, Mike Shanahan, years ago.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Coach John Elway and some of that crowd in our age bracket. And so he's had this incredibly large group of coaches that came from his tree,
mm-hmm.
like his son. And I mean, I bet they're 8 NFL coaches that worked under him, right, that are current.
That's
young guys, kind of a changing of the guard, like really young, bright guys. So I'm listening to Kyle Shanahan and his son talk about that, and what you're just discussing is what he demands. That all the coaches would say, you'd be better be prepared in the meetings. He's always going to challenge you, and not challenge you because he wants to run you off, challenge you because he wants to get to the best possible play.
Yeah.
And he's not going to stop until you get to that. And there's conflict in that, mm-hmm. and there's mm-hmm. big personalities, and mm-hmm. there's emotion and all that. But the goal is to try to get to the best possible solution, best possible outcome.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I thought it was really interesting. But one of the things they talked about that you have to be is you have to be patient in that process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, that takes time, and we're not a very patient society, I guess, at the moment.
Yeah, well, especially.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great sports metaphor that you just used.
Yeah.
but, you know, you think about it, driving all of that Shanahan's talking about is, I want the best play. In emotional language, he's angry.
Yeah.
Not angry to hurt somebody, not angry to do harm
to
somebody.
He's passionate about it.
Exactly. I want us to get the very best play we can. So defend your position.
Right.
Now, there's something good about that. I think when we learn how to do it, and when we're in a culture that can do it well, or in a marriage that can do it well, to make room for both of us to bring all of our desires to the table. But just because I have a desire doesn't mean it's always going to be met. But even just talking about that desire, I think it's a place that grows connection deeper and grows health. Because I'm not stuffing stuff down. I'm not letting resentment grow. I'm putting it on the table.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I'm trying to think other things about anger that would be that would be good for us to spend time on. If anything else in your mind, I'm trying to kick around some thoughts too about it.
I'm just thinking too, I know and we've had different points in our marriage where we've tried to do that, and I think every year we get better at communicating.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't always, it's weird. Sometimes it can lead to more conflict.
Yeah.
But I think we're doing conflict a little bit better. And sometimes it's clumsy.
Yep.
So, you know, again, with all the stuff we talk about, there's no magic pill.
Yeah.
It just, you keep getting better at it.
Yeah.
Keep working at it.
Yeah.
But the, I think for marriages in particular, the resentment is a big,
mm-hmm.
that's a red flag.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so easy.
Yeah. Well, and resentment's interesting. It's cancerous, right? I mean, the longer you don't talk about it, the more it metastasizes, the more the tumor gets bigger, if you please.
Right.
And then it gets that place to where all you can see is the resentment.
That's it.
And Now the story you're telling yourself is anchored in what may have started as a false belief, or may what thought is, or may have started as a really fair, good, healthy desire, but you didn't communicate it, and so now it just turns into this story that my wife never blank, you know, my husband never cares about blank. Maybe, maybe not. It's just that I've let this story get a life of its own. And again, using that cancer metaphor, the tumor's grown so big that that's all I can see now.
Right.
Instead of going, gosh, how do we begin to lance that, dissect it, remove some of it, and be able to get back to just what's the really desire? What is it that you really want here?
Right.
I'll see that in my office sometimes when couples get to a certain, you know, come in and be really angry with each other, really frustrated. They don't communicate well. It always is we don't communicate well. There's so much more than that going on. But they don't communicate well, objectively true.
Yeah.
But there's so much more in that emotional sphere below the surface that's going on. And man, every now and again, I saw it once this week when you get the couple to the place where they're ready to really take a breath and just say, hey, and ask them something like, hey, what's the story you're believing right now about your spouse? Like that you feel like you'd almost die on the hill for?
That's a good question.
You know? And when they're honest and they can get it out, most of the time, as they're saying it, you can see on their face, they're going, oh, crap, this isn't true.
Yeah.
This isn't really true. And then that's when I think something great can begin to happen when you go, well, wait a minute. I'm so stuck in this story I've been telling myself so long that I don't know how to confront that you really did hurt me, and I'm feeling really angry about that, but I also want anger to be connected with you. I just don't know how to get back to that. But a lot of times it's just slowing down enough to go, wait a minute. I'll ask this question. I'll say, so wait a minute. You're in my office today. You're fighting. You're both saying you're hopeless. I had this another couple this week who just said, you know, I feel like my hope is on the ground. I don't have any hope. And I said, okay, well then let me ask you just a simple question. Why are you here?
It's not free.
Yeah. What do you want?
Right.
And what do you want is a question about anger. They don't know that. But what do you really want? And again, there's often a breakthrough moment of going, I just want us to get back to blank, or I just want us to be able to blank, or I just want us to connect this way, or I want us to, and I'm like, okay, good. So you know, I ask the other one, and generally there's a lot of agreement around it. So basically you want the same thing. So can we focus on what you want and start moving toward that? And we need to clean up the mess that's been made. I get that. But golly, there is a shared anger. There is a shared desire that you guys have.
Right.
How do we start moving toward?
Well, that's really good, man.
Well,
you know, and I'm thinking even when you said that, what's the story you're telling about in this example you're using, what's the story you're telling about your spouse that may or may not be true? But then the spouse has a story that's going on in their head.
Exactly.
That from their past and childhood that may or may not be true too. Mm-hmm. And so you know, there are tapes I play about myself that are true, and there are tapes that I play that are not true. And you combine both of those. Yeah. And sometimes you don't know how to clean the mess up, you know, or you're working on cleaning the mess up while the kitchen's still on fire. You know, you're working about cleaning the singe off the wallpaper or whatever. And then, you know, there's still a fire going on the stove.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I think there's always more to the story.
Yeah. When you said that, I don't know why I thought of this. This image could be used about so many different things. It could be used about any one of the core emotions, but I think it's really powerful for the emotion of anger. And I may have used this about something else we've talked about once, but it's the picture that always comes to my mind. You know, anger is like nitroglycerin. It can be used to blow up bridges or to mend hearts. You know, in one form, nitroglycerin is dynamite. In another form, it's a little tablet that, you know, people carry around their pocket who have AFib, and it gets their heart back in rhythm.
Right.
And I think anger is that same way. And I guess what I would just want people to be thinking about is that kind of, we said this earlier today, that anger is never the problem, but not knowing what to do with my anger can blow up a bridge. It can blow up a marriage. It can blow up a job. It can blow up a career really big. The things that we say in anger that's unregulated, when we react instead of respond, we can blow up bridges really big in those moments.
Mm-hmm.
But taking the time to go, man, my anger's telling me there's something I really want, something I really need right now. and then learning to thoughtfully engage. I loved how you said it, your friend, being clear is being kind, you know, or clarity is kindness, however he said it. But I just think, gosh, but when I can let my anger leave me going, there's something I really want to say, and I want to say it well, and I want to ask for what I want, and then let's enter a conversation about that. That's where anger is. I think it can be a superpower for us when we use it in that healthy way.
That's really good.
Well, another good day to be together.
Yeah.
We'll try another one next week.
Yeah.